from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Moscow-Washington relations are in the spotlight again today with the Associated Press reporting that President Trump's campaign manager, Paul Manafort, secretly worked with a Russian oligarch to benefit the Putin government. Here's AP reporter Chad Daly speaking on NPR about Manafort.
He wrote a memo that outlined this kind of vast plan for him to promote Russian interests in the former Soviet republics and also to specifically benefit the Putin government.
Coming up, we'll be joined by San Francisco Consul General for the Russian Federation, Sergei Petrov, and we'll ask about the latest revelations on Trump campaign advisors and Russia, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson's upcoming Russian visit, the war in Syria, and more. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. With Monday's House intelligence hearing on Russian interference in the U.S. presidential election and further revelations today about former Trump campaign manager Paul Manafort's work to benefit the Putin government, Moscow-Washington relations remain in the spotlight. And in this hour, San Francisco's Consul General for the Russian Federation, Sergei Petrov, joins us to discuss Secretary of State Rex Tillerson's upcoming Russia visit, tensions over Russia's annexation of Ukraine and the war in Syria, among other issues, many issues to cover here. And we welcome the Consul General. Good to have you.
Thank you very much, Michael. I'm definitely glad to be here. This time that we are having now is not easy for us to live and to understand. So I would be trying to help you to understand what is the Russian view of all the things happening around.
Which I am grateful for, and no doubt my listeners will be as well. Our listeners, I should mention the Consul General, by the way, has his Federation office here in San Francisco, but is actually responsible for U.S.-Russian relations in eight states here on the West Coast. Let's talk about what's in the news, though, now. It's an Associated Press exclusive about Paul Manafort having benefit by the Putin government. This is the story that we're reading about, and it's a story that is coming across to us in the wake of all this FBI probe and two congressional investigations. Let me just lay it out to you and get your response. Essentially, what's being presented is that Vladimir Putin, President Putin, a decade ago proposed an ambitious political strategy to undermine anti-Russian opposition across the former Soviet republics. That's according to the Associated Press today. And it appears to contradict some of the assertions by the Trump administration that Manafort, who had been the campaign manager, never worked for Russian interests. We're talking about particularly an oligarch by the name of Oleg Deripaska, a close Putin ally. Signed a $10 million contract annually in 2006 with Mr. Manafort, and the business relationship reportedly lasted until 2009. So the implication here is that Paul Manafort, who was also Donald Trump's campaign manager, is working on behalf of or at the behest of Vladimir Putin and his oligarch friend to undermine Western interests and to undermine the former Soviet republics. There it is. I just try to lay it out. Your response.
Michael, yes, I saw this news, though I think it's like many things happening about reporting about Russia is pretty much speculation. It's we do not have any facts. We do not have any documents saying that this is the fact. The fact that I saw today in the news is what happened in London, for example. This another terrorist attack, and I would like to use this opportunity to express my sympathy and condolences with my friend Andrew Whitaker, who is Consul General of the United Kingdom here in San Francisco, and all the British people. And I would add that that's a common challenge that we have, and we have to fight it together. Getting back to the news about Russia, many things that you will read or hear or watch on TV about Russia is very much speculation. And my and that's how I do it today. And my suggestion to the audience, to all the people, look for the source of the information. check the source and read the original thing, and then you will be probably be able to better understand what's happening.
The source, though, for at least many of the things that are being investigated about attempts to, shall we say, undermine or influence or interfere and meddle with the American election come right from our intelligence sources directly.
Meddling, Russia meddling in the U.S. or any other election is another speculation that turned to be a stereotype now. Look what's happening. On one hand, in every country of law, rule of law, we have a principle of presumption of innocence. That means that nobody could be found guilty until it is proven in the court of law. But look what happened with Russia. We are found guilty before the investigation is over. We heard just a couple of days ago that there is an investigation going on about so-called alleged Russian meddling in the U.S. election. But already every source, every news, every publication you will open, and you will see the it's like a fact. And again, investigation is still going on. So we have to wait until we have the results of this investigation. And then we can say that this is the fact.
Isn't it a fact, though, that we're in kind of a cyber Cold War, that the United States probably has been doing spying, China has been doing spying, and that Russia, too, of course, is culpable for doing spying, and that it's almost a foregone conclusion that President Putin had a great deal of distaste, dislike, and enmity against candidate Hillary Clinton?
Speaking about cyber war, I don't think that we have something like that happening, and I hope we will not have. What we have is a huge insecurity in this sphere of cyber communications. And just to give you an example, we have a statistics that was made public later last year that Russian official institutions were attacked by hackers 70 million times over the last year. Same would be probably true about government or corporate or personal things in the United States. So it's a common challenge that different countries should combine forces to fight together. Because as of now, we are trying to deal with it on a national level. We should have more coordination between countries to fight this very important, very, very dangerous challenge that we have, because cyber could be used by terrorists any time now.
Well, in fact, you mentioned the corporate. There were a couple of indictments recently about Russian spies hacking Yahoo, indictments by two intelligent agents from Russia.
Yes, first of all, it was not just Russian hackers, as far as I remember. Investigation about them is still going on, both, by the way, here in the United States and in other countries, including in Russia. So, I think we have to wait until these people are found guilty, and then we can say that they are hackers and they are criminals. And I'm sure that if they are found guilty as hackers and criminals, that they would be punished in Russia, in any country in the world. But until they are proven to be guilty, they are not.
We're talking with Sergei Petrov, who is Consul General of the Russian Federation in San Francisco, representing eight states. I'm sorry, Consul General, you're going to make another point.
Yes. Just to add to that, I wanted to say that again, this shows that we have to stick to this very basic principle. We have legal principle, presumption of innocence.
Until we have it here. I don't believe you have it over in Russia, though.
We do.
You do?
We do, let me chew you.
Really? All those political prisoners who are sitting in, are all those people in still Siberia are given that right of presumption of innocence?
I haven't heard of any political prisoners in Russian. Probably you are speaking about some other periods in our history or in the history of other countries.
Well, there we won't even talk about the nature of who is in prison now or for what reasons, but certainly it is a perception here in the West that President Putin, if people are politically opposed to him, simply does not suffer that very easily or very gently or very tolerantly.
I wouldn't speak for my president, but it's... another misconception that you have here, and that's a big problem, that stereotypes about Russia are very strong here. And the problem is that it's very easy to create a stereotype, and then it would be very difficult to change it. And many of these stereotypes are very detrimental to us, I mean, our two countries as neighbors and potential partners in dealing with many challenges that we have today in the world.
What stereotypes come to mind about Russia that Americans have, in your judgment?
For example, I will give you one stereotype that Russians are big drinkers of vodka.
Not true?
Not true. Because the alcoholic drink that is consumed mostly in Russia is beer, not vodka.
Preference for beer. Now you're educating me. This is good to know.
But there are many others, like, for example, Russian hacking. Again, investigation is still going on, but you will be, you have this expression all around in the news and everywhere. Russian meddling with the election. Again, the investigation is still going on, that, like we were told a couple of days ago. But Russia is already found guilty and convicted for that.
Is there a stereotype of your president? I mean, we have people like Masha Gessen, for example, who lived in the Soviet Union and lived in Russia, who said that President Putin early on raided the media, took over the broadcast television, dismantled via legislation the whole electoral system in Russia. Is this stereotyping, or is this inaccuracy or fake news, or what is this?
I believe that there is a lot of stereotyping about Russia as well as Russian politicians. And what would be helpful is to speak to them personally. And Russia is open to the world media, to the U.S. media, and we have lots of journalists coming to Russia and interviewing our politicians, my president, and I'm sure that that would be the best source of trying to understand what he...
Well, if Senator McCain, who has said that President Putin is a murderer and a thug, came out and said to him, "You are a murderer and a thug," I don't think the President Putin would necessarily want to engage him. But you also have, let's talk about this.
I wouldn't, excuse me, I wouldn't even comment on statements like that. I think that it's not right for a politician to speak, to say words like that.
Well, I want to get into many things with you, but why has this reset not worked? I mean, there's another attempt now by President Trump to say, let's reset. I think he's saying we could fight ISIS together. There are many mutual, obviously, business and financial interests that the United States and Russia have had and could continue to have. Certainly geopolitically, there are alliances that Russia and scaling back in terms of nuclear weapons, which is something that neither country right now seems to be inclined toward. They want to advance their nuclear weapon arsenal. Both the United States and Russia have announced this. Why hasn't a reset? Why didn't a reset work with Secretary Clinton and under President Obama?
Michael, it will take us probably a couple of days to sit and discuss this, why it happened. And I just want to say that our attitude, Russian government attitude, has always been the same with the Bush administration, with Clinton administration, with Obama administration, with now with Trump administration. We are open for good and constructive relationship with the United States of America, considering it, considering the United States most important partner, one of the most important partners in the world for us, and our close neighbor. Just to give the audience an idea, where Russia is the closest neighbor of the United States after Canada and Mexico. The distance between our countries is 2.4 miles.
I remember Sarah Palin said she could see you from her home in Alaska.
In the Bering Sea, there are two islands, Diomede Islands, that one is Russian, one is the American, and the distance between them is just 2.4 miles. So we are neighbors, and we have to be good neighbors. And I agree with you. We have many challenges. We have terrorism that I mentioned, and it's probably the biggest evil that we have now in the world, and we have to be together to fight it.
But we also have Syria, and I think Syria is a big reason why there has been perhaps this reset that didn't work. I mean, United States, again, has held Russia culpable for a great deal of the carnage. It's been hard for the Obama administration. I think it was very difficult. They felt that Assad should be removed. Russia felt Assad should stay. And that continues to be a source of great tension.
I think regional instabilities in general is the big challenge for two of our countries, and we have to deal with that together. And Syria is an unfortunate and very tragic conflict that Russia and the United States should be together to deal with. What happens when we are together on the one side, and that happened with the previous administration when we managed to deal with the with removing chemical weapons from Syria. I know the opinion of some U.S. military people, professionals, who said that something that happened to remove chemical weapons from Syria in the middle of the civil war there, it's something unimaginable. But we managed to do that because we were together. And my strong conviction, both and Fishner as a person, that we have to deal with that together. We have ISIS, we have other groups there that use terrorist methods that kill people, and we should face it, and it's the biggest challenge for us.
Now, there's also concern, though, about ongoing concern in the United States about Russian actions in Crimea and in Ukraine. I mean, these have been serious impediments toward resetting or towards establishing some kind of peace. And I just wanted to read something and get your response, if I could, Consul General, from the Human Rights Watch World Report of 2017. It says the Russian government in 2016 further tightened control over the already shrinking space for free expression, association, and assembly, and intensified persecution of independent critics. Parliament adopted laws expanding the power of law enforcement and security agencies, including to control online speech. Russia continued to support rebels who commit abuses in eastern Ukraine. Russia's actions in occupied Crimea created a human rights crisis. There's a lot in there. There's a lot packed in there, I realize. But essentially, it's this Human Rights Watch saying Russia has a lot to answer for.
You know, we think that human rights is the is something universal. And again, we should deal with that not unilaterally, but in coordination with each other. And we have many things happening in the other countries in the world, many things happening in this country that would probably that is probably not right in terms of the human observing of human rights. But what is important is we should talk to each other about that, and we should discuss it in the bilateral format or multilateral format. What happened with lately in our relations? I'll give you an example. We had a presidential commission established by two presidents that comprised of 21 groups, including a group that discussed civil society, human rights, all these problems. But this presidential commission, as well as this group, was terminated by the previous administration. So now we are not able to discuss. We can just exchange accusations.
You and I can discuss. In fact, I'd like to discuss hopes are with respect to – let me just cut to the chase here, because Secretary Tillerson next month is going to Russia, and I'd like to know what you hope will come out of that. He's being criticized for actually skipping the NATO meeting, and a lot of the tension probably certainly has to do with NATO and the possibility of who's going to join NATO and borders and all of that sort of thing. But there has been a lot of expectation about what he might be able to accomplish because he was given an award by President Putin. He's held in high regard in Russia, but he also promised to essentially give support to Ukraine. I mean, he's on record as having said that. So what can come out, can good come out of this visit? Because the State Department has been stripped away of a lot of its people anyway, but are you hopeful? Are you optimistic about his aid?
First of all, I haven't seen any official statements about him going to Russia. It was in the news, yes, but neither State Department nor the Russian Foreign Ministry have announced any visits yet. And we have to wait until that happens to be able to talk about him going in April or any other months to Russia. But one day he will go to Russia. It's a normal diplomatic practice and normal way for states to interact. And when he goes, there was already one meeting between our foreign ministry, Sergei Lavrov, and Tillerson that happened in Berlin some time ago. And yes, it's normal thing, and certainly we're hopeful. We look at the United States as one of our most important partners in the world, and we are hopeful to have better relations compared to what we have now, be it political, be it economic, be it any kind of cultural exchanges, education.
Would you agree that relations are at a low point, lower than they have ever been, even?
Unfortunately, yes. Unfortunately, it's now pretty low, and we are hopeful that from now on we'll be able to have better relations. That's exactly what our ministers will talk about, or our presidents when they meet one day.
Our guest is Sergei Petrov. He's Consul General of the Russian Federation in San Francisco, represents eight states here in the West. And if you'd like to talk to the Consul General, if you have a question or comment for him, we'd like to invite you to participate and be part of the program. You can join us at our toll-free number. Let me give you that number. It's 866-733-6786. Again, we invite your participation. Toll-free, 866-733-6786. And there are, of course, other ways you can express your opinions or raise questions or join this conversation by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, by tweeting us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum, by going to our Facebook page or going right to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. This is the Forum Program. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. The Russian Consul General, Sergei Petrov, is with us this hour in studio. He's Consul General of the Russian Federation, based here in San Francisco, representing eight states. And we are indeed talking to him about what is of concern to many of us and to many of you. That is the deteriorating relations between Russia and the United States. And let me just give a sampling of a lot of pushback from our listeners, so let me just give you a little bit of a collage here. This is a tweet from Matt who says, "It's unfortunate but expected that a Russian government official cannot or will not speak honestly about these events." David says, "Let me attempt to summarize everything Sergei says. Deflect, deny facts, and play the victim. Your guest is boringly predictable." Igor writes, "This guy is talking about being good neighbors with the U.S. Look what Russia did to Crimea, to Ukraine." And maybe we should take this one. William says, "How is Russia not a kleptocracy?" That word is used often about Russia, largely because frankly, President Putin is, by most standards, and I think we have many ways of judging this, an extremely wealthy man, even far more wealthy than Donald Trump or than many of the oligarchs who he is associated with. He may be one of the most wealthy men in the world. And so that label of kleptocracy, I mean, you find a lot of leaders who are wealthy, but usually not necessarily becoming wealthy after they have attained the office that they have. Donald Trump, for example, is a billionaire. Perhaps we need to see his tax returns to really know how wealthy he is. But the truth of the matter is that Donald Trump did not become wealthy as a result of being in political power.
You mentioned
Putin
that,
did.
Yeah,
did.
You mentioned that you haven't seen tax returns of your president, but we did. We are able to see the tax returns of our presidents. It's all public information, and any public official, including myself. Is obliged by law to declare its earnings and all the earnings we have every year by law, including my president and all the politicians. So I don't know where some people find information about something that just does not exist.
Your president is not a man worth billions of dollars? Because from certainly everything we read, not only here but abroad, in the newspapers
Michael,
abroad.
You have to ask my president, certainly. I will tell you about my
His tax returns have been made public. Didn't you just tell me that?
Yes.
So,
yeah, but I haven't checked it lately, especially we are just in the middle of the campaign. We have to declare our earnings of the last year by the end of April. So I think that in May, beginning of May, you will be able, if you are interested, and our audience, if they are interested, they could get to the official website of the Russian Federation, our tax agency, and they would be able to get the information firsthand.
Your president has said publicly, President Putin has said publicly, the greatest tragedy of the 20th century was the breaking up of the Soviet Union, of the USSR. And one wonders if that is indeed his attitude. And as you know, I know Russian, so I saw the original statement. and it's pretty accurate in terms of the way it's been translated. The fact of the matter is, does he want to restore? I mean, is this what he hopes to do, to restore the former Soviet Union by actions in Crimea and Ukraine and so forth?
You know, when he was, as far as I remember, when he was speaking about dismantlement of the Soviet Union to be the greatest tragedy of the 20th century, he meant people. He meant what happened to people who live in this former Soviet Union. Because what happened... and we feel it even now that families were divided, that economy of a big country was divided, that many things were divided overnight. But the most important thing, again, is our people, because even now people have problems because they found themselves without them wishing it to be across borders. And they have to apply for visas or something to visit their relatives. And it's could you imagine one day that something like that would happen in the United States when a sister from California would have to apply for visa to visit her brother in Utah? That how would you call this? You would call it the biggest tragedy. And for the Soviet Union to be one of the biggest countries in the world at that time, that is the tragedy for not just for Russian people, but for all in the world.
I'm going to go to our callers, but first a question from a listener, and several people are asking this question. Can the Consul General shed some light, or will he shed some light, on financial ties between Donald Trump and Russia?
I am not aware of any ties.
Okay, we could go into that chapter and verse. I am. But let me go to our callers now, and let me bring in a first caller. Is Damien. Morning. You're on the air, Damien.
Thank you, Michael. And great having the Russian Consul General on your show. Good move. Mr. Counsel General, unlike many of my calls you probably get, I believe that Russia did the right thing in going into Syria and standing against forced destabilization of a nation. So I applaud you there. Another point is I believe that the annexation of Crimea is somehow related to the NATO expansion into Ukraine, the potential NATO expansion into Ukraine. And so my two questions are, one, does Russia feel threatened by NATO's expansion? And two, did Russia feel betrayed by the U.S. and Europe's recognition of the coup plotters in Ukraine? And I'll take my answer off the air.
All right, Damon, thank you for the questions. Go to the Consul General.
Thank you very much for this question. Starting with Syria, I say that it's another big misconception here that we are there to prop, that's how you say it here, to prop Assad. That's completely not true. I give you an example. And you know the old city of Palmyra, famous heritage place in Syria. It was under control of ISIS, and it was Russia and the Syrian government who freed this city. And actually, it happened two times. Unfortunately, it was retaken by the terrorists, by ISIS, and we did it again. So it's just an example what we are doing in Syria. Speaking about answering to your questions, yes, unfortunately, it's it's again little understanding of what happened after the Soviet Union was dismantled, and what happened is that Russia was pretty much instead of being helped to be transferring to the market economy. To be part of the world political world, it was pressed and it was encircled. You gave this example of NATO expansion. That's what happened. NATO ended in West Germany when Soviet Union was dismantled.
There is an argument now that Russia has been so concerned about NATO expansion that's led to some of the recent actions in Crimea and in Ukraine, but also that Russia's concern about the EU. And the argument has been put forward about, armies of Russian trolls supporting Brexit, about trying to divide NATO, trying to weaken democratic institutions because of concern of NATO and the EU, and essentially support for extreme pro-Moscow candidates throughout Europe. There's been at least allegations not only from the United States but from France, from the Netherlands, from Germany that Russia has been trying to, shall we say, weigh in on through cyber warfare.
You know, Michael, it's not Russia that expanded to the borders of NATO. And it's not Russia. It's NATO that expanded and came to the borders of Russia. Russia is not on the borders of the United States, but the United States is on the border of Russia. So it's pretty simple. And if we speak about Russia trying to undermine somebody, we are not trying to undermine anybody. What we want is a very simple thing, that our national interests, Russian national interests of the Russian people, should be taken into account by our partners.
We have also been seeing Russia rise, though, in its desire for nationalism. There's been a much stronger nationalism under President Putin. Would you not concede?
I would call it patriotism, and I don't see anything wrong with people being patriotic and people loving their own country. That's the case in this country, and I think that it's
this country has become very nationalistic. I quite agree with you, but we have a lot of callers who want to talk with you. Nancy, you're up. Good morning.
Hi, Michael. I'm a little surprised that you have this gentleman on your show, because what else can he do but support his country? If he doesn't, he could be disappeared. And so I, you know, he's got his back to the wall. And the other thing is that with the expansion into Crimea, I mean, I don't know if the information that we're getting about Russia is true or not true, but we can see that with the expansion into the Crimea and this and Ukraine, it's a little bit like Hitler going into the Sudetenland and other lands before World War II. And I just feel that this gentleman, you know, has no choice but to support his country 100% because there's been assassinations and many, many jailed people who have dissented with Putin. And that's all I
Well, in response to your first remark, Nancy, I think it's important to hear what the Consul General has to say and hear things from his point of view. And in fact, here's Bob who writes, I don't understand why we're so upset at Russian meddling in politics when we've done the same from our overthrow of the Shah to our arming of rebels in Central America. We are just as guilty interfering with global politics as what countries like the U.S. and Russia do. Question from a listener named Rich. Since the Consul General agreed that relations are at an all-time low, I'd like to know what Russia's grievances with the United States are.
Let me first get back to this question that, from the lady. Yes, I agree that I'm one of those 80% of the Russian citizens who support President Putin and support the policy of my government. And it's not that I speak and I say that as an official. I say that as a Russian person. And just to clarify about Crimea, we had a referendum there that people voted for being independent of the Ukraine and then applied to be part of Russia. So it was the will of people of Crimea, 60% of more than 60% of whom are of Russian origins, and they wanted that to be their fate. And that what happened. I don't see anything wrong with that. It completely corresponds with the international law, with the UN Charter.
But she suggests that if you were in opposition, say like Pussy Riot was in opposition, you would wind up with consequences.
I wouldn't call Pussy Riot in opposition, Michael. Unfortunate people who prevented Russians to serve their religion in a church, saying obscenities and making things that one would be not do even outside church, and they did it in the church. So I'm sorry. They are unfortunate people who abused the law, who abused the people who are around. Let's speak about them.
Well, the fact is the United States and Russia do have something in common. They both seem to be, at least up until the Trump administration, supporting the Iran nuclear deal or treaty. It was an agreement, really. It was not a treaty. But here's a question. We had that question about what you feel Russian grievances are with the United States. But let me go to another question here from Kerry, who says, how will the Russian Consul General reply when asked about Russian state-sponsored and systematic persecution of homosexuals and transgender?
Yeah, we don't do that. We have
really?
our law that was changed in 1993, and before that, the criminal law of the Soviet Union had this considered that as a crime, and since 1993, there is no law against homosexuals in Russia. You have laws, criminal laws in the United States for that, but we don't have.
You don't punish?
And we don't punish or prosecute. And it's interestingly, you have a discussion here that homosexuals should have equal rights to employment. And we don't have such a problem. For us, every person of any orientation, of any sex, are equal in terms of employment and the pay they get for their employment.
Now, we have lots of people who want to talk with you, Consul General, but back to the question that came on the website, grievances Russia has against the United States now?
you know, I again, it would be long, and I would prefer to talk about a policy of my government, not about the policy of the U.S. government. If you want to discuss U.S. policy towards Russia, you probably the best way that would be is to talk to your colleagues in the State Department, to your compatriots in the State Department. But what I say that we saw over the last 2 years, we pretty much saw most of the mechanism of bilateral relations dismantled, and that prevents us from talking to each other. And I think that it's normal between countries, and it's normal between people. If you want to understand the other side, you should talk to others, the other side. And that's probably the first thing we have to do between our countries, is to reestablish all the mechanism of bilateral exchanges.
Let me bring more of our callers on here. Let me go next to Andy. You're on the air. Good morning.
Hello. Yeah, hi, and thanks for taking my call and having the Consul General on. My question was, at the outset of the conversation, there was a very precise and specific question about Paul Manafort, you know, who was the campaign director for Trump. And it got quickly, the conversation kind of bumped up or was deflected into a more general conversation around unsubstantiation or, you know, around speculation. So I wonder if there's something specific that can be said in that instance, given the high level of that, you know, those interactions.
Andy, thank you for the question. Consul General.
I would prefer not to go into any specifics with this case, and frankly, I'm not aware of the history of this person. We know that, and that was said just 2 days ago, that there is an investigation going on by the U.S. authorities in what happened during the elections. So why should we interfere with this investigation? Let the people who are responsible for something like that do their job, and then when we have the results, we'll discuss that. And I will be ready to discuss that when we have the results.
I'm going to read a comment here from a listener named Peggy, who says, thank you very much for having this show. The anti-Russia hysteria being fanned by the press and neoconservatives like John McCain needs to be counteracted by just such rationality as the Consul General is offering. We do not need another Cold War. We're getting back to homosexuals for just for a moment, or transgender people. Russian officials are actually coming under pressure, I believe, to check if the new Disney film, Beauty and the Beast, breaches your country's laws against what's described as gay propaganda.
No, as far as I know, it was not officials. It was some politicians who were discussing such a possibility. That's what I read in the press. And but okay, people are free to express their views, isn't it? The right way, people are free to express their views and to express their opinions on this or that case. When you have the decision of the Russian officials and the Russian government, then we can speak about that.
Can we speak about Snowden for just a moment? Would you send him back here if the Trump administration asked for you to do that?
Is he a puzzle that we can send him back? He's a human person.
If they wanted to extradite him, in other words, and yeah, they said that we want him back here, extradited
yes,
back here.
The problem is that we do not have an extradition agreement with the United States.
That's
Russia,
a problem.
Russia initiated and wanted to have this agreement with the United States, but the United States was reluctant to have such an agreement. And when it all happened with Mr. Snowden, he found himself in Russia, and we haven't invited him. He landed in Russian airport in Moscow airport, and his passport was recalled by the U.S. State Department, and at that very moment, so he was not able to board any plane in Moscow to proceed with his travels, because he was traveling not to Russia but to a different place, and so he found himself stuck in the airport. Then he applied for residency, for asylum in Russia.
Yes,
and it's continued like that. It continues like that because he do not have any documentation to travel anywhere, and I think that instrument that should have been used, and as far as I know, it was not used. Since 1999, we have an agreement on mutual assistance in legal matters with the United States. So my understanding that in this very case, this agreement should have been used by the U.S. authorities to approach Russian authorities. But
it was not.
Otherwise, what we heard, both publicly and in bilateral channel, just send him away, like you said. Send him away. I'm sorry. We just spoke about human rights. He's a human being, so he cannot be put into a box and sent somewhere.
Let me bring another caller on here, and that's Doozy. Good morning. You're on the air.
Yeah, Michael, thanks for taking my call. I just want to correct an impression the Consul General created. It has been found by the FBI that there was active attempt by the Russian Federation to intervene in our elections. The only thing that is being investigated is whether there was collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia. That's the only thing that is outstanding.
All right. I thank you for that statement. I want to go right to another caller, and that's great.
Let me comment on that.
Sure. Go ahead.
if you look at the hearings that happened 2 days ago, what was said there, that investigation is happening into the meddling, so-called meddling in the elections, first. Second, the statement that was made by the intelligence agencies somewhere in October, I think, it never accused Russia of meddling with the election. The statement, and you can check that, said that the intelligence agencies of the United States are confident that this and that happened. I'm sorry. In my view, it's two different things. You either accuse or you express your opinion.
Well,
that was the opinion of some government agencies about what happened, but they were still doing their investigation, and they are still doing their investigation.
Well, the investigation is ongoing, that's correct. Yeah. And Adam Schiff laid out a lot of what he said could be coincidences, but perhaps are not coincidences. And let me get another caller on who wants to speak to this. Greg, go ahead.
Morning. I just want to say that's a real good attempt at trying to plant a seed of doubt, but in the real world, we're all adults, so we can kind of, if you want him to say a specific word, the FBI to say a specific word to satisfy you, that's great. But for the rest of us, we have enough to know, and we're intelligent enough to make those conclusions. And based off of that, you're asking the U.S. to have a relationship with you, and this is probably one of the reasons why we don't, because you can't even own, your actions, and it's continually always that way, that Russia tries to find a scapegoat, like a spoiled little child, instead of growing up and acting like an adult.
All right, Greg, I thank you for the call.
I'm sorry I haven't heard everything, but okay, I agree, we all should act like an adult, and acting like an adult, in my view, and it's number one, is to observe laws and to act in accordance with laws, and that's exactly what I'm speaking about.
Here's a comment from a listener named Josie who says, I completely agree with your guest, whom I have had the pleasure to meet. The United States stereotypes people of Russia, that U.S. stereotypes of Russia present huge barriers for any real and productive change. I'd like to remind my fellow Americans that we who live in glass houses may want to think twice before throwing stones. Russian culture is far more similar to ours than many other societies that pose new and real threats to the United States. Maybe it's time to let go of some of those old stereotypes.
I agree. No, we should not be throwing stones. Never. It's something that should not happen nationally. It's something should not happen in the relationship between countries. What we should do is talk to each other, and we should sit and discuss and try to understand the view of the other party and to find a compromise. And the most important thing and in our relations with the United States is that we find compromise that would correspond to the national interests of both countries, not to just one country. We are ready to do that. We are ready. We have been ready to do that with any government in the United States that was chosen by the American people. And we are ready to do it with this administration, and we were ready to do it with the previous.
Well, let's see if the United States can learn how to compromise within its own borders. Consul General, appreciate your coming in and being with us. Consul General Sergei Petrov is Consul General of the Russian Federation in San Francisco, and we are here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11. Forum is produced by Irina Gucci, Tina Larberg, Susan Britton, and Judy Campbell. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll, and our engineer is Danny Bringer. Engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, and we get online support from Amanda Font. Executive producer is Holly Kernan, and thank you for listening. For all of us at KQED, I'm Michael Krasny.
Thank you very much.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.